Hey guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Women Podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
That's right.
Yeah, how are you, my friend?
Oh my God, I'm in hell, but it's fine. Okay, it's fine.
Are you in hell because this comes out on Halloween?
And I'm in hell because I have two elementary school age children and it is now Halloween. I also love it. I understand that it doesn't make any sense.
Can
like,
I tell
I'm
you,
losing
have I ever,
my mind, but...
Have I ever told you, I think probably one of the happiest times in my life was when I was in elementary school. I went to the best elementary school, and I loved all of the, like, stuff that they do for elementary age kids. Like, I just love the plays. I love, like, all the stuff we did on Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. And, like, it is the best time.
My kids are getting to a point, especially my daughter, who's like, oh, I'm ready for junior high. I'm begging you. And she loves school. They both do. They both, like they're good where they're at. But I'm just like, I need you to appreciate the beauty that is your life right now.
Yeah.
Junior high sucks. I'll just say
it's so funny because I really love being like fourth grade, like third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth. Like I really love that age. But I only wanted to couldn't wait to get to the next class because the reading books got more complicated and I was a big reader and I was like,
such
ooh, when I get into fourth grade, I'm going to start reading tapestry books. And you know?
I was the same way. I remember in seventh grade, there were levels of books in one class, right?
Difficult,
medium, and easy. And I was like, that difficult one looks like it's mine.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Such nerds.
God.
But, I mean, all the stuff they did around, I'm not a big Halloween person. And I know here in LA, people love Halloween.
Like, yeah, you better fix that.
I'm not a big Halloween person. Obviously, when I was a kid, you liked it because you liked the candy and that kind of stuff. And that's fun and the costumes. But I'm more of a Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's Eve kind of girl.
I love it all. Now, when I was a child, my mother just did not wrap her head around the whole trick or treat. She was like, it's mean. So she would bribe us to not go trick or treating. And I will always take a bribe. So... it was fun, but not for the reason anyone else has fun. We went to dinner and we got a dessert because, you know, rare do you pay for a dessert in a restaurant.
Right.
Then she took us to a movie, which she literally did once a year. So, but loved it.
Kids, but you get free candy. Like,
yeah,
sometimes people hand out the large Snickers bars, which are like when you're that age are ginormous.
She genuinely didn't understand it till like we were grown-ups and we explained it to her. Like, honestly, like my niece and nephew she's like, did you see the pictures? They're dressing up for Halloween. And I was like, yeah, it's cute, right? And I was like, no, it's just fun. It's just all fun. She thought it was like evil, mean. She just didn't understand it.
Like, so, I guess, Day of the Dead and that kind of thing. But I think that's, you know, so yeah, when I was a kid, I liked the candy.
Let me tell you, problem solved. Go watch Coco. Problem solved. Swear to God, she watched Coco and she was like, I get it.
Coco is so good.
I love Coco. It's one of my favorites.
So good.
1000%. We're watching that this Friday. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Also, I know that Coco is set in, it's Mexico, right? Is it Mexico?
Mexico.
And I know the difference between Mexicanos and Puerto Ricanos. I know the difference, people, but I'm just saying to our Latino brothers and sisters, we stand with you because fuck Trump. Okay.
Fuck him up his ass. I'll just
And the crowd of terrible people that support him that said that Puerto Rico is an island of trash. So fuck you. Puerto Rico's beautiful.
It's
Puerto Rican people
gorgeous.
Are beautiful.
Are you kidding?
And fuck you forever. So on that note, let's get started.
What you said.
Now we have an announcement, Miriam. Do you want to tell our listeners what we have coming for them?
You guys, okay. So, Lavetta and I have some surprises, and I told Lavetta that we are not going to share every aspect of said surprises because it's a surprise.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for some fun new things. We are going to be taking 1 week off after this episode. And then when we come back, brighter and shinier than ever, you will see what you you'll hear.
And see.
You will hear and see. Really?
Yeah.
How will they see it?
Well, our videos are,
our videos, you know, you'll,
and our clips and stuff. And like,
yeah, we're also, we're back on TikTok. So come to us there as well.
Yes. And remember to follow us on all the things. Also copy the link of the podcast and share it with your friends. Don't just tell them about it. Copy the link and send it to them. And, and I know it seems like, cause this is coming out on Halloween, that this is a trick, but no, actually
it's
in a couple of weeks, it's a treat.
That's real. Yeah.
It's a treat.
That's right.
See what I did there? Yeah.
I see what you did.
Because
there.
I am a professional. Okay, Miriam. you're not so sure.
Listen, I love you so much, but you know, sometimes.
Oh my God. Did you see Megan Thee Stallion? And then we'll get started talking about, she is so cute, on Jimmy Fallon talking about discovering Sex in the City.
No, but I want to.
It's so funny because she's like, why do y'all tell me? It's like, girl, it's been like an Emmy winner. Like, there's a reason why I was a big, I love me some Meg Thee Stallion. But she was so cute. She was breaking down all the characters. And we all know that she's Samantha coded, right?
She is like, Samantha.
But it's
1,000%.
So funny because she's like, when I first started watching it, I thought this character was so annoying. And then it's like, oh, this is me. We're like, duh, Meg, of course, it's you. She's so cute. And then she was just saying how, she's like, Charlotte, she's like, she's a little bit DeLulu. She's like, none of her friends told her. And then she dissed my character, Miranda. Miranda's only the worst, I think, now in the new iteration. Like,
she's really hard to watch in the new iteration. Like, Miranda.
The way she treat my boy Steve, who is just like the sweetest soul ever. And so she talked about how much she loves Steve, and then she talked about Carrie, you know, and how she's like, which is what we've all been saying again, Meg, thank you for joining the crowd, right? She's like, she's like, Carrie, if there's a good decision to make or a bad decision, Carrie always makes the wrong decision
every single time. It's really frustrating to watch, and yet I did not put it down.
But then
my
she
God.
Was like, is that me? So, Meg Thee Stallion is so cute. I got her new album, it is so great. If you want to feel good about yourself, just put on a little Meg Thee Stallion.
Gonna do that later.
And she just make you feel like a bitch all the time, and she's the best. So, all right, I think we should get started. So, just in case it's not clear, this will be our last episode of the season. We're going to wrap it up, and then we're going to take a week off, and then we're going to come back with some surprises. And we also want to give a shout out to Deborah Battle, our ride or die. Deborah, we see you. You're always posting on our YouTube videos. Thank you so much for all your support. We love you. We see you, even if we don't always respond. So we just want to let you know we have a lot going on over here. And, you know, I'm working on getting us a...
Every comment, like, truly warms our hearts. We really appreciate it. And all the love right back.
Yeah, absolutely. So now this week I am first. And I was looking for something that was Halloween inspired. So Halloween. So I don't have a murderess. Actually, she technically, we'll see.
Ish.
So, but it is definitely horrific, this notorious woman. And so my notorious woman this week is Joan Rabel or Rabel. It's R-A-B-E-L. So however you pronounce that.
I have no idea.
Now, this is so interesting because this is Los Angeles. This is something that happened right here in Los Angeles.
Okay.
On Halloween day. But we're going back to the 50s in Los Angeles, which, you know, I watched, all the Hollywood movies. What's the one with Russell Crowe?
I don't know.
I love that one. That's a really good movie, even though there's a lot of police brutality in it. One of my favorites, Devil in a Blue Dress, is set in the 50s in Los Angeles, starring the great Denzel Washington. Mm-hmm. You guys should check out that movie. It's so good. So that 1950s Los Angeles is a really, really interesting time. Like, it's like really kind of very specific. So I love any movie that's set during that time. So I found this, I was doing some search on the internet and I was just like, oh, what would be good for this episode? So now, Joan Rabel, not a lot is known about Joan, which I think is owing to the fact that she was a woman who was not like really, really famous until her deed became famous.
Okay,
So I don't even know her place of birth.
Okay.
But what we do know is that in her youth and in her 20s, she was a very successful journalist who spent some time writing, taking writing classes at the University of Honolulu in the late 1940s, owing to the fact that she's on numerous passenger manifests documenting her frequent trips to Hawaii. So,
okay. Now, all I am is jealous. Go on.
I know, right? I've been to Hawaii. I love it there. Now, she was also married, which a lot of women, that's what you did. You went through girlhood. If you went to college, it was to go and find a husband, right?
Yep.
But her marriage ended in divorce sometime in the 50s. Now, a few years after her divorce, she was documented as working as a freelance photographer.
Okay.
And had become friends with another woman by the name of Golden Pizer or Pizer. Golden was a widow in her 40s who worked as a medical secretary. Now, Golden, we know a little bit more about her. And I don't, and it's interesting with Joan. I wonder if Joan was intentionally not like sort of, you know, back then you could kind of hide, you know, back then and move around and people didn't know everywhere you went and wherever you live. So, but Golden was born in Rockford, Illinois, and she was the daughter of German immigrants.
Okay.
Now, Joan and Golden became fast friends when they first met. And some reports say that Golden became infatuated with Joan.
Okay.
Because Joan was a little bit more cool. She had a cooler, more vibe to her. And Golden kind of seemed like, so if you think of Pinky and the Brain.
Yes.
Joan is Brain and Golden feels like Pinky. You're like, yeah.
What are we going to do today, Joan?
Same thing we do every night. Yeah. So it's that kind of dynamic that's going on between these two. Now, it's not clear if they were actually lovers or just close friends with one of them pining for the other.
Gotcha. I was like, there's got to be something. I don't know.
Yeah. But again, this is the 1950s. So even if that was happening, they had to be very on the QT about that, like very down low. So when Joan began working for Peter and Betty Fabiano, so Joan, again, she's a freelance photographer.
Right.
She went in and she met Peter and Betty, who hired her to take photos and do some reception work in one of their two beauty parlors in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Now, according to the Valley Sun News, Valley News Sun, Peter was an ex-Marine and Betty a divorcee. Now, the two met back on the East Coast and they lived in Kingston, New York, where Peter was worked as a truck driver and they raised their two children from Betty's previous marriage.
Oh, okay.
And now in 1956, so, you know, he was in the Marines. He got out. He met Betty, who's a divorcee. They got married. They lived together, you know, middle class people, but they had dreams of being more. So they actually moved out to Los Angeles in 1956 and opened up two beauty parlors.
Okay.
So, and they were very successful. these beauty parlors. So they met. So Joan comes in one day. They hire her to take some pictures and probably for, you know, advertising, that kind of thing. Again, this is 1950s. So at the height of, like, you know, the Marilyn Monroe's and the women, you know, it's post-war and this is the boom. And so it's like working men and oh, the housewife and that kind of thing here in Los Angeles.
Now, back to the kitchen you go. Yes.
Back to the kitchen you go. Now, Joan soon became close to the couple. So close that when Peter and Betty started having marital problems, Betty moved in with Joan.
Whoa. Oh, yeah. It's very close.
So okay. When this happened, the two became even more close. But I find it interesting that Betty moved out of her house and not kick out Peter. So
because
but
Betty
again,
was
it was
probably having an affair with Joan. I'll say it.
That's we're not really sure. But, you know, it, if that was the reason, it could be that, you know, men who came back from the war, again, they had to reassert themselves. Again, this is a time where if you smack your wife around, it's just like, oh, it's not really considered a bad thing.
Nope.
It's considered a bad thing to her, but to society.
Society's
so it's just really
like,
interesting.
What did she do wrong?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So okay, now. Yeah. After so Betty moved in with Joan and, you know, and after that, they became closer.
Okay.
So close, in fact, that the relationship was described at that point on as being, quote unquote, abnormal by the papers.
Okay.
Now, yes, if you're wondering, this is the 1950s. So abnormal was a euphemism for homosexual, gay, lesbian.
I remember being told when I was a child in the 80s that you wanted to be careful not to hug your friends too close because you might actually become a lesbian by mistake. Because that's how that works. Yeah, I remember being told that.
If that's how that worked, I would have been a lesbian a long time ago.
I've been such the lesbian. I hug all my friends.
I would
so much
have
lesbian.
Become a lesbian and stalked so many ladies and probably been married two or three times by now, if that's how that works. Yeah, that's not how that works.
No, it's so, not actually at all. Okay.
Now, so Joan and Betty are hanging out at Joan's place and they're becoming close. But I also think that's just what women do. Women, you know, you feel safe around women and and that kind of thing. But according to Joan, Betty then told her that Peter was violent with her and cruel.
Oh. Okay.
So this is because, again, this is also the 1950s is a time where people kind of kept their business to themselves. They didn't share their home business. So if this stuff was going on, she probably wouldn't know that until she was living with Joan.
Yeah, that's true.
But after a period of time, Betty resolved to give, you know, her marriage another shot. Again, she's already a divorcee, which is already looked down upon in the 1950s. So, so she and Peter reconciled, but Peter had one condition. He insisted that she cease all contact with Joan.
Ooh.
He didn't like the feeling that he was getting from her. And I think to your point earlier, I think he suspected that something abnormal was going on.
Yeah.
Whether it was that Joan fell for Betty or if it was mutual. But he said that you have to cut off all contact with her.
Yeah,
and it could
usually,
be also
that usually works really well.
Yeah, and it could be also, let's just keep in mind, it could be one of those things where, let's say, nothing sexual was going on, but your girlfriend's like, girl, you need to get rid of this motherfucker. You need to divorce him, get alimony.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I don't want her and are putting ideas in your head.
I mean, that
could have been going on as well.
That's true.
But they reconciled and Joan agreed by, I mean, Betty agreed by all accounts. So now Joan, for her part, told us she was furious and she was upset and she was hurt that Betty cut off all contact with her.
Yeah, that's I get that.
So she started spreading their business around and started telling other people, including Golden, that Peter was violent and it was much worse than that she had thought.
Oh.
This could have been true or may not have been true. Who knows?
Okay.
But basically, she intimated that Peter was downright abusive and abusing Betty. So she also said that Peter was further putting Betty in danger by dealing drugs out of their home.
What? Ooh.
Now, this kind of strikes a bit of like Italian phobia. Ooh. He Italian, Fabiano, so he must be in the drugs, the mob.
Yeah.
I don't know. strikes me as that kind of thing.
That's probably right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now that Betty is no longer living with Joan, so Joan has a lot more time to spend with her BFF, Golden. Okay. And so she was furious. So like day after day, week after week, month after month, she would just complain and say how terrible Peter was and how she was worried about Betty. And, you know, she basically told Golden that Peter was vile and evil.
Okay.
And said that he was destroying Betty's life. So she said that Jones, you know, it came around basically to like, we have to save Betty from her husband.
I had a feeling this is where we were heading. Okay.
Yeah. So Joel Golden's like, well, how do we do that? And Jones like, well, you know, we need to figure out how to kill him, how to murder him, murder. And I know.
Oh my Lord.
You can
Lord.
Imagine Golden was like, yeah, say what now? What?
Yeah. wait a minute. Hold on. Take three steps back.
And also, I just want to take a side note here. Now, Golden had never met Peter nor Betty. She had only been hearing about it from Joan.
Golden should be like, oh, I'm sorry. My phone is ringing. I'll be right back and then never come back. That is what Golden should do.
No. That's Remember, Golden is Pinky.
What are Golden we going to do today, Joan?
And then also keep in mind, this is 1950s yes. Los Angeles. People yes. are not hanging out like they used to. I remember I had this friend when I was growing up. She was so cool. She was a black girl that liked George Michael. And she was like me. And I was infatuated with her. I was like, oh my gosh, she's the best thing. And I was so happy to have a friend because I always wanted a sister when I was growing up. And I was just so not, and it wasn't obvious, it wasn't anything sexual, but I thought she was the coolest thing. She was a little bit, she was like a year older than me, but she like seemed so much cooler and hip. And I was just like, and I remember once I was hanging out with her and they started eating grapes in the grocery store.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, that's stealing. Like, and I'm such a like it a is. goody girl, right? And I was just like, mm-hmm. oh my God. But so Golden is extreme of that. Now, I'm not going to let somebody be like, we should murder somebody. I'd be like, I'm like you. I'd be like, you know what? I got some books to read back at the house. I'll check you later.
and then never call her again.
Never call her again. Yeah. So I have a feeling that Golden was kind of isolated and they had been friends at this point for a couple years now. So BFFs. But she had never met Joan or Peter. So she's getting all this secondhand from Joan.
Right.
Golden is. But she was infatuated with Joan. And so she figured, well, if Joan is saying that Peter's a monster, then Golden's like, well, he must be a monster. So she started developing deep hatred for him as well.
Okay.
She would later say Joan described Peter as, quote, a vile and evil man, one who destroyed all the people about him. And then she went on to say, I develop a deep hatred for him, end quote, as well. So she slowly came
out. She's never met the man. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Golden is.
It's fine.
So no, she's a little bit delulu, as Megan said about Charlotte. Now, on September 21st, 1957, Golden purchased a .38 special from a gun shop in Pasadena. She told the man behind the counter she needed the weapon for, quote, home protection. And apparently she's with a guy friend. So, you know, they figure, hey, a lady, you know, needing a gun. Okay. So a few days later, she drove back with Joan to the shop where they picked up the gun with two bullets in it.
Mm.
Joan paid for the gun and Golden held on to it for what they had to do, which they had determined that it was going to be on Halloween night. Hallow's Eve. So on that night, October 31st, 1957, Golden dressed, or Joan had her dress in blue jeans, a khaki jacket, red gloves, heavy makeup, and she donned a domino mask, the kind that Robin wears to fight crime alongside Batman, because this is heyday 50s. Of Batman and Robin.
Yep.
Yeah. So Joan they borrowed a car from a friend. And they went over to Peter and Betty's house.
Okay.
It's Halloween night. So the kitties are out. People are out. You know, they got their doors, their yards are decorated. So they waited outside until almost dark, basically, until, you know, the kids had all cleared out.
Oh, that's good.
And they sat
Please
in the car.
Please don't commit murder in front of the children. Thank you.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
So Joan and Peter's house was on a community street. So when they thought the coast was clear, Golden gets out of the car, goes up to the door. And when Peter opens the door, she shoots him.
Oh, my God.
And then hurries back to the car and they drive off.
Okay.
Now upstairs, because it was kind of late. So they were like, who's coming this late? Right. So Betty upstairs heard a pop. So she bolted downstairs and found Peter lying on his back just inside the front door.
Oh,
there was
my God.
Blood seeping through his dressing gown. So he was already dressed for bed and he was clutching his chest. She called to their daughter, Judy, who's a teenager by this point, who ran two doors down to the home of Valley Division Police Officer Bud Alper.
So
thank God they had a police officer nearby. So they rushed Peter to the hospital, but he never woke up.
Oh, my God.
He eventually died. Now, Betty remained sedated for a few days before going in for questioning.
Okay.
When she was able, so the police questioned her to ask her exactly what happened. And so she said that she had heard two voices that night, one masculine and one that sounded like a man impersonating a woman. So the police dug into Peter's background, and the Independent of Long Beach pointed out that the shooting felt like a gang assassination because, again, they don't know what's happening.
Right.
Like they're like, they just shot him in his, and then he's Italian. So they wanted to know why he was a target. And he had some like minor misdemeanor charges of bookmaking. You know, basically he was working as a bookie in 1948. So back in the day, trying to make money.
Right.
But by all accounts, he was clean. So they asked Betty, they were like, well, who else could want to harm Peter? So she said, oh, there's this woman named Joan. Yeah. So they picked up Joan, but they had to release her for lack of evidence. And according to the Valley News, the murder weapon was found in a department store locker 2 weeks later. So they were like, what is going on? And it was registered. So that was the first lead that they got. So they brought in Joan, nothing. And they were like, okay, why would she do this? Who knows? You know, that's when what is going on? Is she, you know, have abnormal feelings? They don't know because they can't trace her to anything. And they didn't have the murder weapon. But when the murder weapon was located, that was the first lead they had because, it was registered to Golden.
No. Of course it was.
A lab assistant at the Children's Hospital of Los Angeles.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What happened? I registered it in my name, Pinky. Brian.
Why didn't she just throw it in the sea? Why?
I don't know. It's off the coast. We're on a coast. The ocean's right there.
See, this is horrific, notorious woman 101. If you go do crime with another motherfucker, make sure they smart enough. to throw away the gun. So
I put it in the locker, Brian, right there. So I'm not touching it anymore.
So it's not mine, Brain.
So I don't have it.
Listen, I can relate to Brain because Brain is like, I'm just trying to take over the world and I have the most moronic partner ever.
Are you and talking about me right now?
I'm a mouse. No.
Okay.
Brain is like, I'm a mouse. I can't do this myself. I'm actually a small mouse with a big ass head. And I can't do this myself. And So, now, I mean, to be real, Brain would never engage in something as, as low class as murder. He would never.
I mean, actually he would, but it's a cartoon thing. So it's okay.
Yeah, but he would actually just like release gas to make people smarter or dumber so he can rule over them. That's what he would do.
Yeah, that's true.
He wouldn't like kill somebody over like a lover's spat. That's beneath Brain. So now that's something that humans do, not mice. now, so because Golden left it in the locker and it was registered to her. And this is why you need to have gun laws so you can trace things.
Yep,
so,
exactly.
So they located Golden and they arrested her. Obviously, they had grounds to arrest her at her Hollywood home. Now, she lived on Vista Street in Hollywood between Sunset and Fountain.
That's a nice area.
That's it's a really nice area now. And but it's right in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And that they arrested her on November 12th, 1957. So basically less than 2 weeks after the murder.
Okay.
Now, right away, they picked up Golden. And because she's really she really is Pinky. She sang like a canary. She's like, see, this is what happened was. So she told LAPD detectives, sergeants Charles Stewart and Pat Kelly, quote, it's a relief to get it off my mind, end quote.
Good for her. I'm so happy for her. What? OK, why'd you do it? OK.
And then she said, there's this lady named Joan Rabel to talk me into doing this crime.
And this is her address, her phone number, and her favorite ice cream.
Yeah, basically. She said, quote, Joan came over to my house with some clothing, blue jeans, khaki jackets, hat, eye mask, makeup, and red gloves. We dressed up, got in the car, and drove to Fabiano's home, arriving around 9 p.m., end quote. She went on to say that they waited until the lights went out around 11:30. So they got there at 9. They waited for about 2.5 hours in their car. Once the lights went out, Golden, she's like, I got out of the car, went and I knocked on the door. Peter came downstairs thinking, oh, and he even said, he was thinking, oh, it's like a late trick-or-treater. And he even said, quote, it's a little late for this, isn't it? As he was opening the door.
Oh.
She then said, no. And then she raised the brown paper bag that she had the gun in and she braced herself inside with both hands and she shot him. The bag ruptured. Peter fell. So she ran back to the car. When she ran back to the car, Joan kissed her and whispered, quote, thank you, end quote, before speeding off. They then changed clothes, burned the ones that they were wearing, then returned the car to Joan's friend, a woman by the name of Mrs. Barrett. And then she said, quote, we left the car on the street, separated, and walked to our homes, end quote. She also said that at this point, Joan told her to forget that they ever knew each other.
Oh,
which is
Golden.
So fucked up.
Golden, you only did this to make her happy.
And then she's like, pretend like you don't know me. Which
you know
is
what?
So devastating for Golden. And also, I looked up the addresses.
Yeah.
They lived less than a mile from one another in Hollywood.
What?
So they lived close by. They had been BFFs for a couple years, but I think like around 4 years by that point. But after this, she was like,
Joan is a bitch.
Oh, bitch. Joan is a bitch.
I mean, like we knew that, but like that's aside from murder is the worst. I agree. But that's like the cruelest thing. Don't forget
so
you ever
cruel.
Knew me. Bitch.
And then in later testimony, according to the Kingsport Times News, she also said that so they changed her clothes, but she still had the gun after they separated.
Yeah,
she was like, oh, I just rented a locker at a department store downtown and left the gun there in the locker. She said so. And she said that at first, her only thought was that afterwards was that she had saved a friend from an evil person. So by proxy, Betty became her friend because she was Joan's friend.
Mm. Okay.
Now, like I was saying that so they had picked up Joan. Now, Golden lived on Willoughby between Gardner and Vista.
I know exactly.
So again, they were less than a mile. They were less than. Yeah, I thought that was really, really cool. Yeah. That was less than a mile from each other. Now, so the jig was up. So both women hired lawyers. The county grand jury returned indictments against both women for Peter's murder, despite Golden admitting that she's the one that did the actual shooting. So Joan didn't do the actual shooting.
Yeah.
But obviously, and I think once you talk to Golden, you're like, oh, yeah, she's very easily manipulated.
Yeah.
So Golden at the time, she wept. You know, she's the emotional one. She was once she realized what was happening. But she did say Joan incited her to commit the murder. Yep. Because again, he was an evil man who was beating his wife and mistreating her. So she felt like she was protecting her. They were doing their due diligence. Yep. Now, their trials were scheduled for late December. So this moved quickly.
That's very fast. Yeah.
But the newspapers reported that a judge ordered three psychiatrists to examine the women because of the quote unquote abnormal feelings.
God. That's right.
And so one, so Golden told one of the psychiatrists that, quote, "I had no motive personally. Whatever motive I had was to please Joan. I was always easily influenced. I have been impressionable and always trusting," end quote.
Okay. That sounds right.
Now, after meeting with Golden, one of the psychiatrists wrote, quote, "The only thought she had was that she had saved her friend Joan Rebel from an evil person," end quote. So it's that transference of feeling. And so, yeah. Now, Joan, again, Joan is cool as a cucumber. She's not really talking with anyone. She's not really responding to any of this. There's newspaper there in the newspaper arriving at court, this kind of thing. And she seems very cool and collected and kind of cold and calculated. At least that's how she was portrayed by the newspapers. Now, at the trial, or at the grand jury, both women pleaded innocent, Golden by reason of insanity.
Oh, yeah, I would take that.
Because again,
she's not even wrong.
Again, yeah. These are abnormal women. These are lesbians.
Use it. Use it. The world's a shit show. I don't know why I'm feeling for Golden so much. She did commit murder.
She did commit murder.
That was a choice,
but she seemed like a more like... she seemed like a victim, right? Even though she committed the murder.
Yeah.
And but there's also this tinge of homophobia, like queerphobia. This is, you know, these women. And Joan also seems she's more masculine presenting than both Betty and Golden. So I also think that's why she got a lot of the like, and it's very hard to tell because she's not really speaking. So she wept when she, Golden wept when she gave her, recounted what happened.
Right.
But reports say that Joan, on the other hand, smiled as she was led out of the courtroom that day.
Oh, Joan.
I don't know if that's true. I don't know. Obviously, she's a cold-blooded killer.
Yeah.
But is she... like, did she really believe that Peter beating Betty?
That's what justifies murder. That's what I want to know. None of it justifies murder. It just doesn't.
No, it doesn't justify murder.
And
probably
she was in love with her.
Yeah.
You know, like that just, that kind of, you know, you don't go that far because you're worried about your buddy. You just don't.
And I also wonder, like, if Betty was just finally feeling like she can be herself, because I do suspect that Betty may or may not have been, you know, interested in women as well. It's not proven, allegedly. Yep. But I wonder if she felt like at a time, especially in the 50s, where women couldn't really often be themselves, but they can around each other.
Right.
Maybe she was just delighted to have a female friend. Like, you know,
I mean, wasn't trying
to sleep with her husband because there's that going on. You know, who knows? You know, now that they have their business owners and then but really realize, oh, this woman has deeper feelings for me, so much so that she killed my husband. It's just really, really kind of hard to tell from the reporting. Now, both women were charged with first degree murder, but eventually that was reduced down to second degree after they agreed to plea deals because they didn't want to face the trial. And given how the newspapers were reporting on this, I wouldn't have gone to trial either.
No,
I wouldn't have gone to trial. But on March 11th, 1958, Golden and Joan pleaded guilty to second degree murder and were sentenced to only 5 years to life in prison.
Really?
And murder? I think it was again, I think it was because they were seen, they back then, if you were gay, lesbian, part of the queer community, you were considered to be mentally insane in a lot of ways.
I think it was not till 1978 that they took it out of a out of the whatever American something of psychiatry as a problem. You know, you have depression, you have anxiety, you have homosexuality. Like it was in the it was part of the list.
A mental disorder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it was 1978 that it came out of that. Like, that's, you know, why we have to fight. But this helped them.
Get away with murder, basically. And, you know, so after the trial in April of 1958, so the very next month, the Valley News Sun published an article criticizing the recent leniency of local judges and prosecutors on criminals because they were outraged that the sentence was so low. It was referred to, quote, as the trick or treat murder and was cited as an example of women being treated softly in the courtroom also.
Yeah.
But I think the women would disagree with the characterization because, you know, Betty never remarried and reportedly lived a quiet life afterwards until her death in 1999.
Oh, I'm glad she had
another 40 years.
Yeah.
Now, Golden, according to the LA Times, was eventually released and remained in Los Angeles. And in 1971, she was actually made an officer of the Miracle Mile chapter of the Professional Women's Club.
Okay.
And she died at age 83 in 1998.
Okay.
So she stayed here in LA.
All right.
So you could have had like interactions with Golden at some point.
I wonder about that.
Anybody. Yeah.
Right? Do we know? All right.
But Joan Rebel, again, she's a mystery lady. She was presumably released at some point, probably around the same time that Golden was. Yeah. But there is little trace of her or what her life was after 1957.
Wow.
But I also think the lack of knowledge on her is so interesting because, again, she was a horrific, notorious woman. She's terrible. No. She killed this man. She plotted to kill this man who may or may not have been an abusive man to his wife, but who knows? But the fact that they clearly believe that she was, because I think they believe lesbians were trying to be men also. There's that thing. She, when you see her in pictures, she's not playing the game that women had to play, even lesbian women at this time. She doesn't have any makeup on. She's not trying to appeal. She's just carrying herself as herself. So it's hard for me to know exactly what type of person she was, because clearly I think they wanted to just ignore her. Because you know way more about Golden.
Yeah.
Who was more femme presenting and, you know, and also I really think Golden is just a very impressionable, it's easier to feel sorry for her, to give her, you know, to have more empathy for her. Whereas Joan, it's almost like she had disdain for all of them, but maybe that disdain comes from knowing that they have disdain for her. Just being herself. So who knows? I'm not making excuses for her, but I just find it so interesting that we know what happened to Golden, but not to Joan. And so that's why I chose to focus on Joan, because where did she come from and where did she go?
That's what I want to know. Now I really want to know. Does anyone know? Listen to this episode and tell us.
Yeah, let us know if you know anything about what happened to Joan Rabel. Also, another context is that, so this happened in 57, right?
Right.
Only about 10 years earlier, the coverage of the Black Dahlia investigation, lesbians were depicted as murderous degenerates.
Oof.
Although the newspapers, Los Angeles papers, would never dare use the L word in print, preferring tortured, references about quote unquote women being abnormal.
Ugh. Yeah.
And so the relationship between Joan and Golden was also superficially dismissed as Svengali-like influence. So basically, Joan is like a precursor to, Charles Manson. Like, because she seemed more manly also.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they put a lot of that on to her. So she wasn't even given any humanity. She was just treated like sort of an unknowable, a witch. Only deserving of being punished and ridiculed, who committed this murder on Halloween Day, you know. But a man lost his life and a woman lost her husband and a woman lost her best friend and freedom.
Yes.
And the paper seemed more upset over the possibility of women sleeping with other women than they did like the actual crime. So for me, in the end, Joan's biggest crime in the court of public opinion at the time was that she was a cold-blooded, it was not that she was a cold-blooded notorious murderer right. of Peter Fabiano, but because she had the nerve to be a lesbian
yeah.
and not ashamed of it. So that it's is my notorious woman, Joan Rabel.
And this is why, listen, this is why gay rights, LGBTQ plus rights are so, less people will accidentally die. Like, but honestly, because if we lived in a society where it was like, oh, I'm actually a lesbian. Oh, then none of this would have happened. None of this would have happened. It would be no mystery. Betty might be like, I'm bisexual. And she might have ended right. up with someone else because her dating pool was different. Right.
Yeah.
Like that's just and no one, there's no secrets. Like the amount of secrets that they have to put out there, like all these mysteries. It's like, no, bitch, I'm just a lesbian. Calm down. You know?
Yeah. And it's also like Joan and Golden did a terrible thing. They killed a man. But yeah. And we don't know if Peter, let's say if Peter was innocent and he was just like, just a normal dude, right? Just
right.
could be insensitive to his wife as the 1950s or whatever, but he's just a normal dude and he lost his life. Let's say he was abusive to Betty, right? I don't think Betty was like, yeah, kill my husband. Like,
no.
Because obviously Betty was not in cahoots with them because they would have found a better way to kill her husband. But to just show up on like Halloween night and just shoot this man. So now Betty is a widow and has two kids to raise and now business to run as well.
And the kids lost their father and maybe she could have divorced. Maybe she would have divorced him ultimately.
Who knows?
Then the kids would have visited dad and they would have run a business or she would have sold her half of it to him and had nothing because it was the 50s and you were a woman. So there's that. But
yeah. But I just thought that was so interesting because it's not, well, it's clear cut that they killed him and were convicted of it. But like,
listen, if we had the society that you and I fight for, which is all the LGBTQ plus rights, all of the women's rights, none of that would have happened. She would have been like, I'm going to sell you my half. I'm going to open my own credit card and get my own credit. Like, but every one of these people in this story is stuck. They are stuck because society wants them to fuck off. And so this crazy shit happens.
Yep. Murder.
Murder.
Yep.
Murder. I like it with a TH because I sound like I'm smart.
No, you just sound like you have a lisp. I'm just telling you.
Okay. I really thought I sounded smart, but that's fine. I'm fine. No, I'm good.
Well, who's your notorious woman for this Halloween episode?
All right. Happy Halloween, everybody. I found a very cool witch.
Ooh.
From like the 1600s, you guys. Like old school.
Okay. I mean, was she a witch or was she just a single lady?
No, like I think she was a witch. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Her name, when like I look her up, they all call her La Voisin. La Voisin.
Oh, fancy.
Yeah. La Voisin. Yeah, it's fine. V-O-I-S-I-N. Okay. So
Your French is way better than mine. So
I know, right?
I'm not gonna even try.
It's not even good. It's just better than yours. And I'll take it. So she was born Catherine de Chaise in the year 1640. Now, they don't know too much about her childhood, but they're pretty sure she was born in poverty and that she was considered like a street urchin situation.
Oh,
you know.
Okay. Yeah.
Like pre-Dickensian. So even worse than that.
Yeah.
So when she was 9, she started selling fortunes to nobles and was very good at it. And that's kind of why they think this, because there's no other reason a 9-year-old would go out and do this, but she had to make money. So when she was 20, she married a merchant named Antoine Montvoisin. That's how she gets her name. Now, I didn't say that right at all, but what are you going to do? Huh? Okay. I tried. Yeah. All right. So she quickly realized that like, he's not great. Ooh, what'd I do? It sounds like he's kind of a narcissist, ultimately. Like, he was incompetent, he's unreliable, his business was failing. Turns out he was in massive debt. And she was like, not going back.
She married thinking she could get some sort of security. And then this guy's like, I got all this debt. So that's ours now. We got debt.
So she was like, fuck you. Hold my beer. I'm going to go make some money. So she honed her skills from childhood and she went back to fortune telling. Now, while she was there, she explored other things as well, like chiromancy and face reading, and she became a midwife. Now, she's a very, very, very smart woman.
Wait a minute, hold on. What is face reading?
I don't know.
Oh.
It's like your future looking at your face. But okay. I don't know,
like, the like your hands, like the line on your, okay, okay.
Yeah, but it's your face. Like, I don't know.
I'm just, yeah.
I thought I was a better witch than I am.
That's, no, it sounds like it's all made up is what I'm saying. It just sounds like it's made up.
Let me tell you, this woman is a businesswoman. So she developed her fortune-telling business and grew it by selling magical objects and potions. Yes. So, like, she also kind of entered the dark arts, creating living in a world of well, we'll get to that. But she so she developed this by she studied modern methods of, like, physiology. She would spend a lot of money creating the atmosphere. This is like this. We've seen all of these movies, right? Which would incline her clients to believe her words. So she had a special robe made out of crimson red velvet, and it was embroidered with eagles in gold. And it was 1,500 livres, which I think is a lot of money. I don't know. I couldn't find out. She became very, very wealthy, and she also became famous. Her clients were the highest aristocracy of France. Okay. Now, she had some issues in 1665, around then. Her divination was called into question by the congregation of the mission at the Saint Vincent de Paul's order. But she defended herself successfully, and they let her keep going. Like, she,
you know, so
I don't
interesting.
Know, I don't know what she said. Right?
It's so interesting because I think that rich people who come from rich families are probably the easiest to fool with flattery, and because a lot of their problems can be solved because by nature of their money and their status, right? And it almost sounds like if you just give them the right amount of advice and encouragement and flattery, their problems get solved and they think you are a witch. They think you have magical powers.
Right. Like, it makes me kind of go, Lavetta, I think we're doing the wrong thing. I think you and I need to make our money, and that is by telling very, very rich people their fortunes.
Yeah, and just being like, oh, if you go and you meet with so and so, it will turn around, and if you offer $1 million, because it will. Like, these are like, they're just basically. Yeah. She wasn't a witch; she was a therapist.
Listen,
she was a life coach.
Listen, she's she's the OG life coach. Oh my god,
OG life coach. She wasn't a witch, not a witch. 1,000%. OG life coach, like
Let me tell you how rich she got. She bought the house next door. So she bought her own house, and then she bought the next house. Okay. Oh. Now, her services became in demand in Versailles, and King Louis the 16th. I can
one
read.
Of those with a curly
Listen,
wig.
It was curly wig, high heels. You know the guy.
Yeah.
His courtesans would go to her for aphrodisiacs and, like, love elixirs. And she was like, and because you know he had a penis, they all worked. Right. she's exceptional. Okay. Now, She also dabbled right into the dark arts. Now, allegedly, I don't know. Does anyone care if I say alleged or not? So she realized that they all wanted to have someone fall in love with them. Okay. So that she also realized that someone, they would want someone to die so they could inherit. Or the third most common request was that their spouse would die so they might marry someone else. So she's it's like,
Aquatofana.
Yes. Yes, she did. She was inspired. Yeah. Now, she was like, listen, it will come true if it is the will of God. But also it'll come true because she sold them poisons to be there.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this is not brain surgery. She's just like,
So she also did, she performed like black masses, which is essentially like, I didn't know this because there's not a lot of, there's no Satan in Judaism, but it was a mass to Satan. And so she would perform them. So that they could
satanic services, okay.
Rituals. It's some crazy shit. Now there's like rumors that they would like bloodlet a baby over a bowl. Now my two cents is that they didn't do that. I don't know anyone who's like, here, hold my baby and bloodlet it. Right. But the also possibility that they would take a baby that's stillborn. Now, her most important client was Madame de Montespan. I said that wrong. she is the official royal mistress to King Louis XVI. Like, I love that he has an official mistress. Like, those are my bitches. Those are my hoes. That's my official mistress. And this is my queen. You know?
Those are my bitches.
He had a church.
Oh, I have taught you well. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate you. Okay. So she lived... the name of her house was Villeneuve-sur-Gravois. She received clients there all day. I know I said it wrong. Leave me alone. And listen, so during the day, her clients would come to her. She'd sell them potions and make that money. And then at night, she would play her violin at the upper class parties, at the fanciness. On top of which, this is like her day to day, right? She went to church every week. Yes, she did.
This sounds like a lot of work for somebody who's rich. If I'm rich, I'm not working this much.
No, right?
But you know what I think it is? I think you, if you come from poverty too, the fact that she gets to rub shoulders and go to the, with the aristocracy and get invited to court and stuff like that.
And she wanted to be a part of it. And I wonder too, if you think about it, if you are who you are and you want to go to these parties, but do you really want to chat? Do you want to mingle? Maybe not. Right. Because you're also, you know, selling them shit. So,
but also she's, as we established with Marie Laveau, like part of the power comes from knowing information.
Yes.
So you go to these parties, you can get all the gossip and the tea, as we say nowadays. Mm, yeah.
You're right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So she supported a family of six, but it also included her husband and her mother. So she had three children. Yes, math. Math is power. she was also known to have at least six lovers, including the executioner, André Guillaume, Monsieur Latour, Vicomte de Couseron, the Count de Labatie, the alchemist Blessus, the architect Fauchot, and the magician Adam Lesage. Now
this is what I'm talking about. Okay.
You know.
I see you, girl.
I'm exhausted. That is a lot. That is a lot.
But But all of these are strategic too, right? Like,
yes.
Because at first I was like, her husband, but then back then, mm-hmm. being a married woman is a form of reputation. You have to keep your reputation,
absolutely.
So you can move throughout society. But obviously, she's like, I'm making money now, so we
right.
do what I say.
Exactly. Now, at one point, Adam Lesage tried to convince her to kill her husband, and she almost was like, ooh, that's a good idea. But then she changed her mind at the very last minute. So he lives. Now, she was very interested in science and alchemy, and she actually financed several private projects and enterprises. Some of them were concocted by con artists who did try to swindle her. Mm-hmm. But, you know, mostly she really was interested in what she was doing. I do think she believed a lot of her own hype.
Mm.
You know, it sounds to me like she was researching it, you know, was looking into it, finding the truth of what she was doing. But I also read that she suffered from alcoholism. So, who knows where that plays in, right?
I mean, but didn't everybody suffer from alcoholism?
I'm pretty sure water was poisoned, so you had to be drunk all the time.
These people didn't drink a lot of water. It's all wine.
No,
and
it's all wine.
It's all wine.
Also, there was a rumor that one of her lovers abused her, and I don't understand that. Because she has poison at the ready. Like, what?
Men don't think, girl. Like, and also, I really think that's probably a good reason to hold on to your husband. So especially if you guys have a quote unquote understanding.
Which then, they obviously do. Right?
Yeah. And men tend to stay in line when there's another man around sniffing around a woman.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
So, yeah.
All right. So remember I said she was a midwife.
Mm-hmm.
She also started to include abortions as part of her services.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, she did. Because it was illegal at the time. And abortion is healthcare. I'm just going to say that. And she had a network of abortion providers working under her.
Yeah, because you know what was also coming at that time? Rape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, woman's right to choose. Are we veering away from the subject a little? Oops. I don't care.
Yeah.
So business is booming. She has like several employees. She's like the OG boss bitch. You know, she's just like living her best. Now, the death of the king's sister-in-law, the Duchess d'Orléans, okay?
Okay.
Had been falsely attributed to poison. So they thought she died for poison. And the crimes of another woman, Madame de Brinvilliers, and her accomplices. So she had been executed in 1676, Madame de Brinvilliers, because of poisoning. So people were thinking about this. Now, at the same time, a riot took place that accused witches of abducting children for the black masses, remember the bloodletting, which I think is a lie. I'll just say it.
Yeah, this sounds like satanic panic that we had in the 80s.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
And the priests were reporting a number of people were confessing to poison. They were confessing to poisoning their husbands. So
because that was probably common.
Now like I thought. Hold on. I thought you could confess in safety, priests. Come on. Let them share.
No. The priests were all, I mean, the church was on the take back then.
Yeah,
and some of them,
for real.
Some people say they still are on the take. Like, they, and you know what? Honestly, if I was a clergy person, and which is a high status person during this time, and they're like, so-and-so came, did so-and-so tell you that they poisoned, da, da, da. I'm giving up the goods. I'm just like, listen, I don't want no smoke. Because I want to stay at my house.
That's true. Listen, I have a lot of money and power.
And
that's
power.
Fair.
I want no smoke. So, yeah. And it's like, especially if you're accusing women of poisoning, and it's like,
But I have a theory that this is why witches were attacked, right?
Oh, yeah.
Stop abusing your wives, assholes. They won't poison you. Jesus Christ. Okay. So in 1677, the fortune teller Magdalene de la Grange was arrested for poisoning and claimed that she had information about crimes of high importance. So that happens. Now, in 1678, Marie Bosse, B-O-S-S-E, became a problem. Now, Marie Bosse was her nemesis. The two of them, you know, they were like, you're a bitch. No, you're a bitch. You know, it was that kind of thing. It's fine. Now, one night they go, they both attend a fancy dinner party with all the very fancy people, right? Mm-hmm. And Marie is bragging to everyone that she's making so much money that she can retire. And she tells everyone that she's so rich because of the successful poison that she's selling to people to murder. Okay. And she's just telling everybody. Yeah. Because, I mean, what are we going to do today, brain? Exactly. So there's this fancy lawyer in attendance. And he, like, hears this. And, like, you know, snitches should get stitches. But in this case... That's just not how... I'm sure he's like an asshole to his wife and was like scared. So he's like, oh, fuck.
I mean, think, to be fair, you know, though, somebody's bragging about making money because they've been poisoning a whole bunch of people. Yeah. And I was a lawyer. I'd look into it.
I might do that, too. Okay, fine. Fine. So they interrogate... The police interrogated her. But this is like the 1600s and she is a woman. So they were probably not nice, right?
Right.
And so she was like, let me tell you everyone I know. So she did.
Oh, no.
As they were rivals, Catherine Lavoisin was a, you know, you should really talk to her. Now, 2 months later, she is arrested and she admits everything. She sells out all of her suppliers.
What? This is Catherine?
Yeah. 350 people were subsequently arrested.
Damn. Wait a minute, though. She was questioned. Was she not probably tortured?
She was tortured.
Okay.
Of course she was tortured.
Okay.
And then in 1680, she was burnt alive at the Place de Grève because that is what they do to witches.
No. Yeah. 1685, you said?
1680.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
No, she was burned alive.
She was burned alive. That's fucked up. And she was at the top of her game.
Oh, man.
I know, right?
Oh, and you know, it's so interesting because our witch trials here, Salem... It was the 1692.
I was going to say they're around the same time, like,
which is interesting because 1680. So that prejudice and that stuff is in people's minds in the quote unquote new world in about 12 years later. If she dies at the stake in 1680.
Yeah. And there were others that did too. Like,
Oh, yeah.
That was...
This whole witch burning thing came from Europe. Like, yeah, oh, yeah. It's totally.
America loves all the terrible things from Europe. We're a real big fan.
So funny. It's like, yeah. So, wow. Talk about white on white crime. Witch burning is like centuries old white on white crime.
Seriously. Someone's got to do something about that culture, you know?
Damn, they burned her at the stake. Oh. Mm-hmm. Dude,
you know that she had her own business, had her own money. You know they were like, we're gonna let everyone know how you died.
Yeah, you know? See, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking it's like put her back in her place.
Yep,
it's a warning to other women who get too big for their britches.
Yep,
you know. Oh man, and snitched out by another woman who couldn't keep her liquor. I bet you she was drinking wine and she was just bragging.
I bet you they were all drunk all the time.
It's
because,
like, girl,
the water was poisoned.
Just retire. Don't brag that you're gonna retire because you've been poisoning people. What?
Listen, because I manage my money really well. Let's find other ways of bragging to everybody. Okay, bitch.
Oh man. this is why. Oh, man. Yeah.
But also, if you're good at selling poisons and you're making all this money, why retire? Just keep selling poison. I'm just saying.
I mean, it sounds like they all had to work, because when you're dealing with rich people, I think that has not changed throughout history. When you're dealing with rich, spoiled people,
yeah,
they can be exhausting, even though you're making a lot of money from them.
That's like a good point.
So it's like, I would imagine it's exhausting work. So you want to retire. But yeah, I mean, we talked about it with, you know, Julia Tofana, like,
yeah,
Aqua Tofana. It was, that was going on, and everybody all over Europe was like, oh my God, even Mozart, I've been poisoned by Aqua Tofana. Well, he was Austrian, so he didn't sound like that, but
no, you know, not at all, but cute.
So there's this, but also it goes into that mistrust of women. We all know now that accusation of being a witch is really, usually there's other stuff behind it.
So much. And honestly, the whole poison thing, right? Yeah. Was because women didn't have rights. Like, again, like, you create this world that you and I are fighting for, and you're not going to have this problem. Men will live. They won't be shot. They won't be poisoned. We will divorce you. We will say, yeah, I don't like this. Yeah. This is not good.
And
can't
especially
talk to me
if
like
you,
that, you know,
especially if you make it where they can't divorce.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, and then you can divorce, but then a woman has nothing because no one's going to hire her. Yeah. She can't start a bank account. Right. She is shamed for getting divorced. Like,
yeah, it's the benefit of it's in men's best interest to leave women alone, because if you push us back, motherfuckers don't start dying. Just keeping it real.
Just telling you like it is. Like, you don't have to like it. If I were a man, I wouldn't like it either.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
it is what it is.
And smart men know. Smart men know, like, we need to leave the ladies alone because they gonna start killing us.
Listen, my husband knows when to take my children outside and play with them. Mm-mm. I see the look on her face, and it will not end well for you. So let's maybe stop talking to mom right now. You know, like, that's a smart man.
A smart man. Smart men know, like, I don't want no smoke from the ladies.
Like, my
don't
child accidentally called me fat once, and he was like, we're leaving this house right now. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Mm. And then my child doubled down, and he was like, honey, here's a gift card to a spa. You know, he did what he had to do to save our child. That's,
you know, I wonder if there are men out there who, I wonder if fathers often have conversations with their kids like, listen here, kid, you're fucking it up for all of us in the house. Stop it.
And I literally look straight at Sal like, this is going to be on you. Because I love my child too much, but he's an idiot. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's so funny though. I hadn't even thought about that. The secret lives of husbands and their children.
Yeah.
Like,
the good husbands.
Listen here, kid.
They're suffering.
No. Yeah. You're not fucking this up. Things are going well for us.
Yep.
Why did you have to say that, dude?
Why did you have to say that? Yeah. We were all having a nice time. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh my God, that is so crazy though.
You know,
but thank
what it
you
was?
For sharing that.
I was what looking was down and he's like, Mom, you have two chins when you do that. And I just slow turned to my husband, like, your child just said that. Okay.
You better get your child before I burn them at the stake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I do love my child more than anything, so I would request you to save him from me right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh my God. All right, guys. On that note, that wraps it up for the latest episode of Notorious Women Podcast. Again, remember to follow us on all the things. Leave us a 5-star review in the Apple Store as well as on Spotify. I don't believe you can leave one on iHeartRadio. So if to help the show, please go to the Apple Store or Spotify and leave a 5-star review. You can also support the show through our Patreon, patreon.com/notoriouswomen. That's patreon.com/notoriouswomen. And Miriam, how else can they help and support the show and find the show?
Well, we have Instagram, Notorious Women Podcast. We have TikTok, Notorious Women Podcast. We also have an email, notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. You can email us. You can also DM us on Instagram if you want. And that is, also YouTube, if you guys will go to our YouTube, because you can comment there as well.
Yeah, and we hope you guys have a wonderful Halloween on this. Yes. I mean, this was about murder. We had murder and witches. Like, yes. Perfect. Can't get more Halloween than that. And then remember, we're going to take a week off between this because we're going to bring back some surprises, some fun stuff. It's good stuff. And thank you so much for supporting us, guys. And we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.